Welcome to Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Weldon. This week, we are presenting part one of Max Goodname and the Silent Night, an original story by Daniel Hines, read for you by Kelsey Lee, the original host of Stories Podcast. Today, we'd like to say a special thank you to Carter and Hazel and their family, Eli, Ariella, and Zoe and their family, and Sean and Hannah and their family. Thank you for helping to support our show, Carter, Hazel, Eli, Ariella, Zoe, Sean, and Hannah. You are part of what makes it possible for us to continue to produce fun new stories for our listeners. If you would also like to support our show and receive a thank you in a future episode, please head to patreon.com/stories and make a pledge, then send an email to Amanda at storiespodcast.com and tell us who to thank. And as a special treat, if you pledge $5 or more to the Patreon, you can listen to all of Max Goodname and the Silent Night immediately instead of having to wait for part two to be released next week.
Hey, grown-ups, power up your family's playtime with the Nintendo Switch system, the home of Mario and friends. Jump into the unexpected with Mario, Princess Peach, and more in Super Mario Bros. Wonder, or challenge each other to a race in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Go to Nintendo.com and browse the full lineup of Nintendo Switch systems. Additional accessories may be required for multiplayer mode. Games, system, and some accessories sold separately.
Thanks! Enjoy the episode!
Max Goodname and the Silent Night. Chapter 1. The House of Silence. In the kingdom of Northend, far away from the royal court and the trappings of decent civilized folk, there was a great mine so deep and dark that no man had ever seen the end of it. On the surface, it didn't look like much, a natural opening in the rock wide enough for maybe 10 dwarves marching side by side. But as you went deeper, it became a twisting mass of dark tunnels and side chambers that split off and snaked away in passages as complete and complex as the veins in your body. The miners who worked the caves, brave and hardy dwarves all, could be heard to say that no dwarf has ever known more than a tenth of the mine's secrets. The older and wiser among them knew that wasn't true. The truth, they said, to anyone who would listen, was that the mine was alive, a predator powerful and cunning, and to try and learn her secrets was to be consumed, swallowed up in stone and darkness, and never heard from again. They were right, but not in the way they imagined. Our story starts in a deep recess of the mine, deeper than anyone has dared dig for hundreds of years. On the charts, the foreman marked it as the Great Western Bore, but the miners called it the House of Silence, because it was so deep no outside noise could reach it, so the sound of your breath was as loud as the sea breaking on the shore, and the beat of your heart was like the drums of war. The House of Silence was always worked in shifts of three, for safety, and the miners sang aloud as they worked, striving to keep the overpowering quiet at bay.
When gold is hid in rocky bones, break the stones. When darkness presses cold and damp, light the lamp, light the lamp. When the silence presses strong, sing a song, sing a song. When the bird falls from its flight, run for light, run for light.
This last verse was more than just a simple rhyme. It was life-saving advice known to all the miners who worked in the House of Silence and other deep places. You see, they would bring down a bright yellow canary with them, and if in their digging they hit a pocket of poison air, the bird would fall to the ground, and they would know to run for the surface and cleaner breathing. The three dwarves working now had forgotten their canary, or else, for better or worse, much would have been different.
"What's the time, Jack?" one of the miners asked, leaning on his pick and wiping the dirty sweat from his brow.
The other two miners stopped working as Jack shook out a watch on a long silver chain from his pocket.
"It's pushing dinner time. You boys want to call it a day?"
"Aye, and why not?"
said the third miner, nudging the cart full of glittering gold ore that rested between them.
"It's a rich vein down here in the silence. No need to go hungry when there's plenty more to dig tomorrow."
"True enough," Jack said,
and he turned and gave a mighty swing with his pick, meaning to stick it in the far wall and leave it for the night. But instead of sinking into solid stone, it punched through with a chunk, creating a fist-sized hole into a dark and unexpected room beyond. A strange whistling wind poured out of the gap, sounding like an angry voice over stone lips. It blew back Jack's hair and sent him staggering.
"By earth and stone," he yelled, struggling to be heard over the wind. "Ernie, stay back from there."
But his warning was ignored. The miner named Ernie was reaching into the hole Jack had made and pulling out more stone.
In just a minute's work with hands and pick, he had widened the hole enough to crawl through.
"Ernie, that air could be bad," Jack said. "Tell him, Cass."
He looked plaintively at the third miner. Cass looked to Ernie clearing the hole, then back to Jack and shrugged. But he pulled up his black bandana to cover his mouth and nose, just to be safe. Jack and Ernie did the same, and Ernie crawled into the strange, windy chamber, his lamp held out in front of him, casting a splashy yellow light. When he stood in the chamber, he suddenly felt very small. The light from his lamp, good bright oil, couldn't reach the ceiling or walls. The room he was in was simply too vast. It stretched in all directions like a great ballroom made of stone and wind and darkness. Jack and Cass came in behind him and gave gasps of amazement.
"By the king," Jack whispered softly, "this is bigger than the great hall at the castle."
Cass sniffed at the air and wrinkled his face.
"It doesn't smell right in here. We should come back with a canary."
Jack nodded, seeing the sense in it, but Ernie was already moving forward into the darkness. His lamp seemed to grow dimmer as he went.
"Ernie, get back here," Jack called,
but Ernie moved forward like he hadn't heard. Unknown to his friends, the dwarf had seen a strange red light at the end of the shadow, and it was calling him forward. Its sweet red song seemed to fill his mind and heart and stout dwarven body. Step by sturdy step, he moved towards it. As he approached, he saw that it wasn't a light at all, but a raw ruby, bigger than his clenched fist, jagged and unfinished along the edges, and colored a deep red, a blood red. It was standing on a beautifully carved altar of black stone and held in place by slender tendrils of wrought iron.
"Look at that," Ernie said. "The size, the color. It must be worth more than 100 carats of gold."
Jack stared raptly, but Cass looked around at the darkness stretching in every direction and felt a sudden fear in the pit of his stomach. He noticed that the most of the light in the chamber was coming from the crude hole they had entered from. Ernie's lamp was guttering and nearly extinguished.
"Ernie, your lamp,"
he said, but Ernie didn't hear him. He and Jack were both staring at the glowing red stone, their bodies filled with its red song, their faces splashed by its red light as they leaned in closer and closer, the light from the lamp growing dimmer and dimmer. Cass's eyes were beginning to adjust to the dark of the room, and he could see the edges now. There was no furniture of any kind, apart from the altar and the glowing stone, but carved into the rock of the walls were statues of men. Armed men, holding long swords and shields, each one bearing an identical face of blank white marble. Ernie and Jack, completely enthralled by the ruby, leaned in closer, and closer still, their faces pressing cheek to cheek, so close to the stone now that if it was a maiden at a ball, they could have stolen a kiss.
"Jack, Ernie, come on!"
Cass shouted. Jack shook his head as if waking from a dream and took a hasty step backwards, but Ernie was too far gone. The song of the ruby was filling him now. He felt it singing out from his bones and echoing wildly through his veins. It was part of him. A red song in a house of silence. Ernie reached out and laid his hand on top of the ruby. And that's when everything went bad. The stone flared brighter and the glow spread up Ernie's hand and arm and covered his body with its blood red light.
"Ernie! Ernie!"
cried Cass. But when Ernie turned to look, he barely looked like himself. His dark hair and thick dwarven beard had changed to pure white, and his eyes showed no iris or pupil, nothing but blank slates of ruby red. A crimson light seemed to spill from them and hang around his head like a fog.
"Oh, no. Oh, earth and stone,"
said Cass, stumbling backwards and away.
Jack, we have to go. This isn't right."
Jack didn't move a muscle. He simply stared at Ernie, or what once had been Ernie, with a look of pure fear on his face. Ernie reached out a hand, and Jack slid forward into his grip.
"Tell me,"
Ernie said, in a voice that wasn't his own, a voice that sounded like it caused him great pain to speak.
"Where am I? When am I?"
Jack sputtered and tried to pull away, but he was held fast by Ernie's glowing fist.
"Ernie," he said, "your eyes, your skin, what sorcery is this?"
"You dare question me?"
Ernie roared, and he threw Jack across the room like he weighed no more than an empty tankard. He turned and placed his hands on the ruby once more, and it seemed to pulse with recognition when he touched it.
"Arise, my servants,"
Ernie said in that strange and painful voice.
"The silent night has come again. Rise. Rise!"
And he let loose a long burst of laughter as the stone soldiers that lined the walls began to grind into motion. A foot here, an arm there, then all at once pulling themselves into action, lifting their stone arms, saluting what once was Ernie. Cass slipped through the hole they had entered from and then pushed their cart of gold in front of the opening to block it. Red lights spilling through the gaps. Terrible, painful laughter spilling through the gaps. Cass turned and ran, the light and laughter hounding at his heels. Chapter 2. The King's Court.
You see, Your Grace, if you grant my guild the license to put these prisoners to work, the kingdom would benefit in the following ways.
The voice droned on and on. Max Goodname, knight and would-be hero, could barely keep his eyes open for boredom. He was seated at the rear of the great hall, listening to members of different guilds pitch the king their proposals. The king sat on a magnificent throne of gilded wood, painstakingly inscribed with the names of all the kings who'd sat in it before him, and raised on a platform 10 feet high. The guild members stood on the ground below him, pleading their cases. Max and the rest of the court, an odd mix of lords and ladies and masters, sat in wooden benches at the back of the hall, watching. Most were there to see and be seen, to prove that they were welcome in the king's presence, and thus important. Max was there at Wallace Q. Wallace's suggestion. The ropey wizard thought Max painfully ignorant about matters of state, and even though he was right, it didn't make the proceedings any less boring. Wallace was sitting next to Max and looked just as bored as Max felt, which made Max feel a little better, though he couldn't have said why. The guild member was launching into point 21 of his 142-point plan when the doors of the throne room burst open with a bang. The guards on the door spun with their spears at the ready, but it was a king's herald, followed by a pale and haggard-looking dwarf.
"What is the meaning of this?"
said the king, his eyebrows coming together like clouds before a storm. His eyes fell on the herald.
"Augustus, I trust this interruption has an explanation."
The herald seemed to shrink under the king's gaze. He stuttered and stammered, but couldn't seem to find his tongue. Instead, it was the dwarf who came forward.
"Your Royal Grace, my name is Cass. I come with grave news from the Western Mines. There's been an attack."
The crowd burst into a muttering, then clamoring roar. The royal guards beat the butts of their spears on the ground until order was restored.
"An attack?"
said the king in a suspicious tone. His eyes wandered over the dwarf, obviously critical of his dirty and ripped leather mining clothes and the ugly sledgehammer slung across his back.
"If there had been an attack on the kingdom, how is it I've heard nothing from our outposts, from our scouts, from our knight-errant on our soldiers in the field? How is it, Cass, that a dwarf from the Western Mines is the first to reach me?"
Max watched nervously. The Western Mines were deep in the Kingdom of Middale. For an army to reach them unseen would be impossible. Then again, Max would have said a giant basilisk in the king's own forest was impossible as well, if he hadn't slayed one but a month ago. Cass reddened, uncomfortable.
"The attack came from within the mine, Your Grace. There was a ruby buried in a room in the western boar, deep, deep, deeper than we've dug since my father's father's time. Ernie, my friend, he touched it, the ruby, and he set it aglow. He threw our other friend clear across the room, and then he woke an army from the stones. He called himself the Silent Knight."
The king sighed and shook his head. Other members of the court tried to stifle laughs and mostly succeeded. Wallace created an illusion on Max's knee, small so only Max could see. It was of the dwarf running from shadows in the dark, a cowardly expression on his face. Max couldn't help it. He laughed aloud. The king shot him a dark look. Max gulped and clapped his hands over his mouth.
"A stone army? A glowing ruby? I can't spare soldiers for rumors. There is bad deep air in those mines. All know it. Tell me, did you have a canary with you when this attack occurred?"
The dwarf blushed a furious red.
"No, Your Majesty, but..."
The king cut him off with a slice of his hand.
"Bad air, then, I'd say. Bad air and bad dreams. But since you've come all this way, I won't send you home with nothing to show for it."
The king turned to Max and Wallace.
"Since the brave Sir Goodname and his magical friend Mr. Wallace think the threat of an attack is so funny, seems they may be just the men to investigate this disturbance. You'll take the pair of them and depart at first light tomorrow."
The dwarf looked at Max and Wallace, his face full of open rage. He turned back to the king.
"I ask for aid and you give me a boy and a conjurer? They're green as an emerald. The mine is under attack. I say I need soldiers, wizards, clerics. Keep your children.
The king's expression darkened. His voice took on a hard edge.
I won't be questioned! Not in my own throne room! Not anywhere!
He gestured to Max and Wallace.
Sir Goodname, tell the dwarf of your deeds.
Max rose, embarrassed.
Well, we won the Great Squire's tournament, and I earned my knighthood at the king's own hand. And we defeated a basilisk in the Great Northern Woods.
Cass spit.
You won a tournament of kids and killed a snake, you mean?
He turned back to the king.
Pardon, your highness, but this is a serious threat, and we need serious... Hey! Hey!
Cass had looked down and noticed he appeared to be wearing nothing but a pair of bright, polka-dotted underwear. Everyone laughed. Even the king smiled.
Wallace! That's enough!
The wizard mumbled an apology and dropped the illusion.
Good Sir Dwarf, you'll take my knight and my wizard and you'll show them to the mine. You may not like it, but I know Max and Wallace will show you their worth. And if you dare question me again, you'll spend the next year in a dungeon learning some manners. Are we clear?
Yes, your highness,
Cass said, humbled.
Now is there anything else, my boy?
If it please you, your grace, I could use a cleric as well. If it's bad air, as you say, my friends have been down there a long time, days. And it'll be days more before we return. They'll need healing, your grace.
The king smiled.
I know just the one. Now, Sir Goodname, please take Cass and Wallace to your rooms and pack what you need. You leave at first light.
Chapter 3. Songs on the Road. Max rode easily, one hand holding the horse's reins and the other passing a skin of sweet juice back and forth with Wallace. They were 2 days on the trail and expected to reach High Mendwell, the castle of the clerics, by nightfall.
You think we should offer him a sip?
Said Max to Wallace, nodding at the dwarf riding a dozen or so yards ahead of them. Cass had scarcely said a word since the trio had left the castle, preferring to brood in silence and fidget with his horse's stirrups, trying to get them to more comfortably fit his short, tree-trunk-thick legs.
Nah, he's so sour he'd probably turn the juice bad. Better just leave him be, buddy.
But Max couldn't take his companion's silence any longer. He spurred ahead and pulled his horse alongside the dwarf's.
Bit of juice, friend?
Max said, offering out the skin.
Juice is for children. Oh, earth and stone, I've been given children.
All right, fine,
said Max, and he pulled his horse in front of Cass's, forcing the dwarf to stop short and nearly spilling him to the ground.
You think I'm a child?
He pulled his shield onto his arm, not the silver one from the northern forest, he'd returned that to its keepers, but his heavy oaken shield, painted with the sword and crossed wands he'd taken for his knightly crest. Max slid off his horse and walked a few feet away before drawing Parlo's old sword. The grip was wrapped with pink-dyed leather, worn almost to white, but the blade was clean and shining and freshly sharpened.
Obviously, you don't think much of me, but I won't be insulted. I'm a knight by the king's own hand, and I did slay a basilisk, whether you believe it or not. You wanted an army, but you got us. And you don't have to like it, but call me a child again, and I'll cut your saddle off, and you can walk the rest of the way to Mendwell on those tree trunks you call legs.
Cass looked at Max, and Max looked back, heart in his throat. Sure, Cass was short, but Max didn't have any illusions about how strong and tough the dwarf was, nor did he doubt that the dwarf would be a nightmare with that heavy, well-worn sledgehammer he carried on his back. The moment stretched, flickering and uncertain as a freshly lit wick, but finally the dwarf exploded in a rough laughter.
Put up your sword, good knight,
Cass said with a smile.
Not a child, I see that now, thank you. Thank you for the rough words, they're what I needed.
Max sheathed his sword and remounted his horse, confused.
Believe me or not, there's dark magic at work in the mines. I fear I've lost my friends for good, and it's turned me into a rock-stubborn fool like my own father used to be.
He took the skin of juice from Max and took a long sip.
A basilisk is no trifling thing, and I hear you rode armless against Glendon Glaive and Reynard Roan. Fierce fighters both. Is that true?
Wallace had pulled up alongside them, and he leaned in his saddle to clap Max on the back.
It's true! I illusioned him some armor, and he knocked the fierceness right out of those two!
Cass grinned, but still he looked troubled.
I hope the armor you're wearing now is real, Sir Goodname. It's no bad air we're facing down there in the House of Silence. There's some strange magic at work. Dark magic, and I fear steel alone won't be enough to face it.
Call me Max, and don't worry. Wallace is an amazing wizard. and Corley is the best young healer in the realm. Between the four of us, we'll figure out how to stop whatever's going on.
Plus, at High Mendwell, there'll be lore mothers. Not just one, but a dozen. Maybe one of them will have heard of this ruby or the Silent Knight you mentioned.
Maybe so. For now, though, I'd like not to think about it. It's like a rock in my guts. Do either of you know a good traveling song to pass the time?
Wallace shook his head. Nothing in the common tongue, but I know a goblin song that would make a cleric faint. Cass laughed.
Let's hear it, then.
Wallace cleared his throat and then barked out a guttural. Max laughed.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Well, said Wallace with a shrug, goblin isn't exactly a musical language. You have anything better?
Anything would be better than that.
Well, there's a song Parlo used to sing when we were riding, but I'm not sure it's any good.
After that goblin drivel, two ogres fighting would sound sweet. Let's hear it.
I've got a pony, his name's Baloney, his hooves go clippity-cloppity-clack, and when you see my pony and me, careful, cause this baloney bites back.
Wallace broke into a fit of laughter, and even Cass smiled.
Wizard, I'm sorry. Turns out there are songs worse than goblin after all.
They laughed again, Max joining in.
All right, then. If you don't like our songs, you sing one. Give us some dwarven music.
Cass straightened up in the saddle.
All right, here's my favorite. Though it sounds better with a rock pick keeping time and a cave for echoes, I'll promise you.
Deep down in the mines, the hungry dwarf he finds. Not a fruit or nut or tree, but the gold to buy all three. Deep down in the earth, our mother stone gives birth. Not to pup or calf or foal, but golden rock and inky coal. Deep down in the dark, down where shadow fights each spark. Endless battle waged on day, but the light will find a way. But the light will find a way.
All right, you win.
We're a team now. Win or lose, we'll do it together.
They rode on to the castle, side by side, together. Chapter 4, Broken Love, Silent Night.
Max, good name!
It was Corley, running across the castle's drawbridge, white robes flapping about her heels. Max swung down from the saddle and caught her in a rough hug, though he was careful not to pinch her against his armor.
The king sent us a messenger bird telling us you'd be coming. There's to be a meal in your honor. You can even bring your scruffy-looking friends if you want,
she said, shooting Wallace and Cass a wide, teasing grin. Max introduced Corley to Cass. Corley was gracious as ever, but Cass barely seemed to care. His eyes flicked over everything, suspicious. His body seemed tense and impatient. Max knew he should probably feel the same way, but Corley always had a calming effect on him. One look at her beaming smile made his stomach feel all swirly and strange. He looked away from the cleric and tried to focus on his surroundings instead. The castle of High Mendwell was more beautiful than Max could have imagined. The walls were 100 feet tall, made of pure white stone and capped with gold merlons. In place of gargoyles, the battlements were guarded by angelic-looking men and women, all smiling, all with golden hands.
They're the clerics of old, famous ones,
said Corley when Max asked about them.
The golden hands stand for healing touch. There's no higher honor.
Max remembered Corley, all stone from the basilisk's glare, and had to fight down a shudder.
And here's the university,
Corley said, gesturing to a 4-story-high wing of the castle, white-robed figures entering and exiting by the dozen.
That's where I've been spending most of my time. After the incident with the basilisk, the masters decided that I really need more training if I'm going to be questing with unsavory characters.
She shot Max and Wallace another impish grin. I'm savory as a beef stew, said Wallace, but nobody paid him any attention.
I'm sorry, Corley, but we don't really have time for a tour, or a meal for that matter,
said Cass.
We need to get back to the mines. For all I know, the Stone Army has already taken them over.
Corley stopped, looking from Cass to Max.
The letter from the king said it was bad air.
That's what he thinks, but I think there's more to it. I've been riding with Cass, and I believe him. Let me ask, have you ever heard of a cursed ruby or someone called the Silent Knight?
Corley shook her head.
No, but I've only just started my history and lore lessons. A Lord Mother would know more. Let's go see Lord Mother Wins. She might know.
Wins. That's a dwarven name.
So it is, and so is she. Come quick, her class just let out. Maybe we can catch her before she goes.
Corley turned and led them into the university building. It was broken up into small rooms, just big enough for a desk and chair alternated with great stadium-style lecture halls, big enough to seat 200. The benches tiered so that each row could see clearly over the row in front of them. Other rooms had padlocked doors, and a few were full of strange glass instruments that meant nothing to Max, though Wallace Q. Wallace had a hungry gleam in his eye. As they walked, they got a lot of strange looks. Most of the clerics were women, and all were wearing the flowing white and silver robes of their order. The three armed and armored men stood out like a dragon at a ball. Finally, Corley ushered them into one of the sprawling lecture halls. It was empty except for a white-robed dwarf with flowing copper hair, shuffling papers from a podium into a leather folder.
Mother Wins,
said Corley, as they descended the steps.
These are the questers sent from the king. They are in need of your wisdom.
Mother Wins looked up from her papers. She had a spray of red freckles across her cheeks, and her glasses sat a little askew on her crooked nose.
Questers from the king, she said, turning and seating herself on a table behind the podium. What is it you're looking for?
Mother, we seek a song of truth, sung by Faith's own voice.
Mother Wind smiled and gave a merry little laugh.
So someone has done this before, I see. Maybe you're not so young as you look.
She turned to Cass then and said something in dwarvish. Cass blushed and replied in kind.
Very well, said Mother Winds in the common tongue once more. Who will stand for these outsiders?
I, Corley Anders, will stand for them. By skin and stone, by blood and bone, I do swear their virtue.
Then by skin and stone and blood and bone, let us sing to them. What song would you hear, my brave boys?
We seek a blood-red ruby and the silent night.
All the humor vanished from the Lore Mother's face.
Go close the door, child. The rest of you, please sit.
Once that was done, Mother Winds took her position behind the podium, as if she were teaching a class. Max, Wallace, and Cass sprawled across the benches. Corley sat at prim attention.
The king doesn't know what he asks of you. I beg, forget this song and return to him. Come back with an army, and maybe then we will sing it.
That seemed a fine idea to Max, but Cass shook his head.
Mother, please, my friend touched the stone. Whatever the silent night is, it is in him now. There's no time to be going to and fro, castle to castle. That mine is full of dwarves, full of your kin and mine, and we are who the king has sent. Please, sing us the song and let us ride. Send a bird to the king if you must, but we cannot afford to delay.
The silent night, loose in a mind full of our kin. These are dark days, and growing darker still. I will sing you this song, and I cannot stop you from riding, but I'll ask you leave Corley behind. This is too much for her and too soon.
Fine.
Good.
No. Mother, these are my friends. If they're going, so am I. I know you wish to protect me, all of you, but it's my job to seek the cures for dangerous magics, and I wear the white robes of a master.
The king gave them to you too young.
He gave them to me is what matters. I'm going to the mines. Now please, sing us the song.
The Lore Mother looked at each of them in turn, eyes sad.
Very well. If you insist on this folly, let me sing the Thrice Darn song.
And then she sung.
There once was a knight known far and wide for his singing voice, lovely as a bride, all warm and smooth as golden mead, sweet to hear and pure of deed. With his honeyed tongue he won the love of a fair princess born high above, of a fair princess born high above. She wasn't kind, but was a beauty. So they married, swore by death and duty. But death came sooner than they dreamed. The bride grew sick, and soon it seemed she would soon surely pass away to memory's mist, to dirt and clay, to memory's mist, to dirt and clay.
So the knight went to an old wood's witch of darkest power, thrall to a lich, and begged her to please heal his wife, in trade offering his very life. The witch said, "Well, I've made my choice. Keep your life, I'll have your voice. Keep your life, I'll have your voice." And with her spells all darkly sung, she stole the knight's famed honey tongue. From that day on his voice did rasp, a pain to hear, a pain to grasp. But the witch kept up her end. The princess soon began to mend. The princess soon began to mend. But when once healed his voice she heard, all raspy cold, the words all slurred. No longer could she love the knight who had won her heart with song so bright. So she left and left him all alone. His love turned sour, his heart turned stone. His love turned sour, his heart turned stone. He went to the woods and slew the witch, and gained her power, became a lich, an undead demon with magic black, who never spoke except to attack. He conjured an army of silent stone, their faces pale of marble shone, their faces pale of marble shone. And he smashed the castle of his once wife, and would have taken to her very life. But the ancient wizard's goodly folk came together and did invoke a mighty spell with a ruby bright, to imprison strong the silent knight, to imprison strong the silent knight. They took the gem and buried it deep, for its secrets dark the earth to keep. But one day it may be unearthed, the evil held once more rebirthed. And when that day shall come to pass, spare the vessel but bright stone lash, and not with steel or iron blade, but with a song and witch's wand, and words that once the gods forbade. Words that once the gods forbade.
The song faded away, but it was a long time before anyone dared to break the silence it left behind.
To be continued. Today's story, Max Goodname and the Silent Knight, was an original story written by Daniel Hines with Nate Auger as Max Goodname, Emily Auger as Corley Anders, Daniel Hines as Cass and the Silent Knight, and the very talented Kelsey Lee as Wallace Q. Wallace, the Lore Mother, and everyone else. If you would like to support the show, please head to our iTunes page and leave a review for Stories Podcast. If you would like to receive a thank you in a future episode, please visit patreon.com/stories to make a pledge. Then send an email to Amanda at storiespodcast.com and tell us who we should thank. Part 2 of Max Goodname and the Silent Knight is currently available for all of our Patreon supporters and will be available for everyone else next week. The artwork for this episode was created by Lindsay Ruane. Check out this week's illustration and find info about submitting your own illustrations at storiespodcast.com/art. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Stories Podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus Kids in Apple Podcasts. Grown-ups, before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.